Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals dealer. We also offer the highest-rated privately held depository service in the Northwest United States and probably well beyond. Our building is highly secure. As kind of an idea of where it's at. I had the fire marshal and three terrific firemen in this last week. Wonderful guys. I love them. Praise God for their work and their service to our community. Side note, most of these service individuals, folks, you know, they're not doing it for the money. Teachers, cops, firemen. I mean, these are people that they've chosen to serve. I mean, by some standards, the pay is solid. I mean, but you know, can you even imagine, folks, what some of these guys put up with anyway for us to protect us? And I know there's a lot of media hype, and I hope that a lot of these police officers understand that, you know, all the media hype isn't even real. It's just about ratings. It doesn't reflect the heart of Middle America. I know there's areas that have been brainwashed and biased and influenced, but, you know, anyway, thanks for your service. So we had some firemen in this week, and it was kind of fun because the guy was like, "Hey, you remember me?" And I'm like, "Not exactly." And he goes, "Well, I was the guy that you were arguing with back when you built your building, you know, about the fire stuff, because we have, bullet and bomb-resistant polycarbonate windows and, you know, 16-inch concrete and steel walls wrapped in brick, and then our building's broken down into major corridors where, you know, the walls are made out of military grade Kevlar, which is bullet bomb and fireproof, and it just goes on and on. And he was like, you know, "If you have a fire, we cannot get in your building." So we talked about I have the clock tower. The guys said, "What if about that?" And he said, "No, even that's polycarbonate." So we built it. I built the building to be really relatively extremely impenetrable, better than any bank in town from what I'm hearing. And we just talked and kind of reminisced, and he wanted a box with a key in it. And I'm like, not going to put a key out there. And he goes, "Well, our boxes are really secure." I said, "Well, let's hire an independent expert." This is back in 2006 or five. I said, "Let's hire an independent expert to determine what's more secure, my building or your box," you know. And so they put the key box at the end of the building in a post, and eventually I didn't put my key in it, but eventually it got popped open, and it had other keys, but tenants had changed their locks or whatever. But the point is, their box wasn't as secure as my building. And but they're good guys. We had a nice chat, and they kind of laughed, and we came up with some strategies in case, but we also discussed the fact that if we ever did have a fire, it's going to be contained in one area. And because the way the building's built, it's designed accidentally in order to do that. So I put that out there for you if you're considering, you know, depository service or anything like that. We've been doing this. We've been in business since 96. We're very legitimate, solid as a rock. I like to consider Coins Plus the Lloyd's of London of the precious metals industry and rare coin industry. We're solid. I mean, we've got an incredible inventory. We're highly capitalized, absolutely 100% debt-free. There's no debt on this business or my life at all whatsoever, which gives you the confidence of, firmness, I guess, in security of your finances. I learned, you know, for years in banking, when we'd hire somebody, we obviously check their credit, and we would watch heavily for extreme personal debt or personal problems. That oftentimes would be the precursor to, you know, various sorts of problems as an employee, like minor things like theft, in absconsion. And there's all kinds of things in banking. There's ways you can steal in banking that you wouldn't think of. It's not just taking cash out of the drawer. There's ways that you can write loans and pay off other loans and continue to roll them over. And trust me, it'd be very stressful, and in the long run, you're not coming out ahead, but it happens a lot. You get these people on limited incomes that are, you know, they're coming in, they're borrowing money against, the, you know, fake loans or whatever. So you get that point anyway. But, you know, it's just important to understand when people are looking for any kind of a financial relationship or transaction, credit really plays a major role. I've had this talk recently with some close relatives of mine that are younger, and I'm like, they're like, what's the good of this, a credit and all this? Credit shows your character and your integrity. It shows even more so how you operate when things get tough, when the going gets tough. Now, if you're young and you don't have much, you got a credit card. I've heard people say, well, I don't have enough credit. I'm being told I need more credit cards. I need this. You know, folks, if you got a credit card and it's enough, it's enough. I would never say to rack up credit just to get credit. You know, one thing, I've had credit for 30 years, and this is just some financial advice, but, you know, I've had credit for over 30 years, and it's been bulletproof, you know, and it started out when I was in college and with the First Citizens Bank of Bozeman, Montana. I had a banker guy in there that was old school. I'd go in my sweatpants and my flannel shirt, you know, because all I did is work out and do sports, and I just didn't even have an income. And I mean, I did, but it wasn't significant. He loaned me money to buy cars, you know, and I always made right on them. We do them on a real short term, you know, 12 months or whatever. And I always made right. And I got going and I did one after the next. And when I moved, I realized they didn't report to the credit bureau. I went round and round to get those reported. After I got out of college, I was trying to do some business, but you know, and then from then on, we've just built and built and built. We've never had a 30-day, 60-day, or 90-day late on anything ever. We've never had a medical collection hit our credit. I'll tell you, integrity is huge, folks. You got to be out there making things right. I listen to a lot of people talk about, you know, they'll have really bad credit, and we'll start talking to them, and, you know, or bankruptcy. Oh, yeah, that bankruptcy was a medical bankruptcy. And then I look at their credit, and I'm like, okay, that's great, but what about this a year earlier? What about this 2 years earlier? What about this 3 years earlier? So a lot of times there's a character flaw there. I've had Christians, I've sat, and I didn't intend to cover this, but I think it's very important. I've sat in on a prayer group when I went to a certain church that actually was probably one of the best churches I've been to. However, there was an assistant pastor. And, you know, I'm gonna go this way. I've been money, and I, you know, people are like, you say money, they go, but, you know, money has been my thing since college. It just, God just put me in that, on that career track. And there's a certain understanding of, there's a certain level of comprehension, a way the brain works. You know, I have a strong mathematical background. I've done incredible amounts of mortgage lending, every kind of consumer finance lending, visas and everything. Even to the point of, you know, as a bank rep or bank regional manager, repossessing, you know, rental properties, having to become a landlord, having to clean stuff up all the time, you know, rewrite contracts, do all the investigations, and make all the decisions. I've got a strong background in that. And I can tell you, when it comes to, you know, credit and things like that, it is absolutely, it's important to have impeccable credit. Your credit really does say, if you say you will, did you? And I hear people all the time, oh, these evil banks, and my interest rate's so high, and I've had guys call, you know, I got Wells Fargo Financial. By the way, folks, if you're out buying furniture or stereo equipment or whatever, and they're doing 90 days same as cash and 12 months no interest, say no. Just say, you know what, if you got the cash now, say how much is a cash discount? And if they say, well, there is none, say, you're telling me that you're doing 12 months same as cash, but you won't give me a discount for cash up front. They're full of baloney. They either are full of baloney or they don't know what they're doing. A lot of times they don't know what they're doing. A lot of times even the manager doesn't understand it. But here's the thing. When they sign, any time a company does 12 months same as cash or any of that stuff, it is sending the contract to Wells Fargo Financial. Most of the time you'll be filling out their credit app, and you'll also be, you know, obligated to pay them. Why Wells Fargo Financial? That was Norwest Financial. Norwest Banks bought Wells Fargo. I was with Norwest Banks, most profitable bank corporation in America by a landslide, which means a lot of pressure on their employees, but top employees and top pay. Wells Fargo was bought out by Norwest. They kept the name because it's, you know, since 1883 or whatever. It's a beautiful name. It's well known. They got the Stagecoach and all this stuff. They kept the financial division separate. So people don't understand. They think, oh, Wells Fargo's financing it. Well, not that Wells Fargo's good. Most people know they're not. They're a bureaucratic mess. But what's even worse is they have a financial division. And they, I was talking to a guy the other day. He's got like a you know, a revolving account at some retailer that he did like the 90-day same as cash or whatever it was. And once it rolled over, it went to like 26.99%. Cost of funds being about 1.35 right now at the most. So they're making these exorbitant rates. You got to read the fine print. You become an expert. Reading contracts isn't that hard, okay? But what you do, you don't sit there. You don't always have to sit there and read every word. You comb it. You see what each paragraph's about, and you comb it. And you get the gist. And the only time, you know, you really can object, it's a contract. They're boilerplate. You don't have a lot of choices. You have a choice to sign it or not to sign it. The only time, you know, I'll admit, I'll oftentimes very casually pencil in statements that negate certain clauses or paragraphs for the simple fact that later on when things come up, they'll pull it out and they'll go, well, you're obligated here. I can't tell you the number of times they pull out the contract and they go, how did you get away with that? Well, the way I got away with it is I just, you know, I write it in real lightly and real nice underneath the paragraph with a star, and I put a star by the sentence I don't like, and then I'll initial it and put a date on that, which is the same date I sign it. You know, a lot of times they don't mind when you're going into business, but I'll tell you what, you got to be thinking ahead all the time, folks. It's super critical that you're just prepared. There, you know, one thing in America that really bothers me is the concept of because it's legal, it's right. Okay. That is foolishness, is it not? Because it's legal, it's right. Think about this. You can sign a contract with anybody for anything. I could be semi-incontinent and you could come to me and, or incognizant. You could come to me and you could say, hey, here's a contract that's going to give your, you know, your sister half your estate. And I'd be like, okay, say I wanted to sign it, right? And it could be a completely different contract. You could be lying to me. But the minute I sign that thing, I'm obligated legally. There are, you know, there are incapacitation protections. But though that's another road. That's a tough road to go down. But the bottom line is, in America, contract law holds water. So you have to be your own attorney. You have to be your own guardian, your own protector. You've got to be smart. You know, do not ever, and this is just based on recent activities with different family members, do not ever make decisions out of haste and urgency or fear. Do not make decisions out of haste, urgency, or fear. If you're feeling it, don't do it. Push back. If you're trusting the Lord, He'll provide. There's a difference between the do or die feeling and the peace of the Lord handing you a good thing. Remember, when God's got a great plan for you, Satan, Lucifer, the devil, will oftentimes give you counterfeit options first. He does not want you to have God's best. Jesus said that he came that you may have life and have it abundantly. He wants us to literally have the best of the best of the best. But he knows that it's completely and totally dependent on our spirit towards him. He's the God of the universe. There's so many scriptures that tell us that if we align our will and our hearts with him, he will bless our socks off. And if we're faithful with little, he'll give us much. I was talking to a good friend this weekend, great guy, good work ethic, just a neat guy I've worked with over the years. He's got kind of a remodel business going, you know, fixer-upper, just a good guy. He's got good integrity, great work ethic, and he's really fair, and he's just good. And he's like, Kevin, man, I'm like, you know, I need more. I'm like, I know you do. Because the guy's got talent, you know. But I'm telling him, I'm like, look, you do the right thing all the time. If you do the right thing and you work your hardest, God will see it and God will honor it. And you lift everything up to God and you pray. You give it to God. Now I'll slide over to one more topic. I watch movies. I like them. I could critique them. I've been around. One of the most incredible movies I just saw, you've got to watch. It's called Greater, and it's the story of Brandon Burlsworth, the Arizona Razorback walk-on. Trust me, it's an extremely spiritually Christian movie, and it is the most moving, powerful story. It is the story of a overweight, obese boy determined to go all the way in football, absolutely lacking in talent, sitting around eating chips and cheesecake literally his whole life, and just busting it and busting it and busting it and overcoming persecution and all kinds of belittlement. I mean, just beyond, but absolutely touching, tear-jerking, and one of the most motivational movies I've ever seen. It's called Greater. It's a story of Brandon Burlsworth, happened in the 90s. Since then, they've completely realigned the Arizona Razorback program. They have special scholarships for the best walk-ons. They have the largest walk-on football team in America. I think they were at one point at 350 kids. They finally had to start a pre-screening program. But they've crushed it. They've just had so many incredible players come their way, and all kinds of people have weird things happen in their lives. But I'm telling you, persistence. I mean, if you want one message out of that movie, it is persistence. There is nothing better than persistence. I'm going to see if I can find a quote from one of our extraordinarily liberally radical presidents, okay? Maybe, okay? So I've got here Calvin Coolidge, all right? We've got Calvin Coolidge. Let's check here. Anyway, we'll go and get more details on him anyway. We know he's the president of the United States, and I'm thinking he was president. I won't even say what I think. I think I'm right, but I don't want to say it. Okay, so here we go. We've got Calvin Coolidge. This is a beautiful, beautiful quote. Probably one of my favorite quotes ever. He says, this is Calvin Coolidge, President of the United States. Well, here we'll go back and get into this stuff. Let's just do that. Almost. I'm sorry. I love computers, and it's not. My problem is I don't pre-prepare all this because I never know what I'm going to say. So Calvin Coolidge was right before. He was the president during the crash of 29 and during the Roaring Twenties, though. Really impressive. So listen, this is one of the best quotes you'll ever hear out of man. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, quote, press on, unquote, has solved and will always solve the problems of the human race. Okay, I'm going to read that one more time. I think it's absolutely beautiful. I know it's not scripture, but it's close. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. By the way, I'm going to stop. I had a really great pastor friend in college that I used to memorize scripture with every week. And we memorized a ton. I mean, you know, first the entire chapter of 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, you know, on and on. And we would, chapter and verse. You had to be able to quote chapter, verse, commas, periods. We would not allow an and instead of a but. It had to be 100% accurate, right? And he used to always say, you work as if it's all you, pray as if it's all God. And I used to be like, well, if it's all God, why are you working hard? Well, I've learned over the years, folks, because God honors those who honor him. The old saying, which isn't a Bible scripture, is God helps those who help themselves, right? Well, that's not a Bible passage, but isn't that true? Because people say, well, that's not true. And it's like, okay, let's look at the obvious. If people reject God, okay, if you God helps those who help themselves, it doesn't mean you're out there, you know, glorifying Lucifer while you're doing stuff. I'm talking about people that if you acknowledge me before man, I'll acknowledge you before my Father. If you reject me before man, I'll reject you before my Father. The other thing, too, we got to look at is the fact that we have each been given a series of talents. And no matter where you go and what you do, and in my world, you always have the parable of talents on the top of your mind when you're meeting people. And you meet people, I meet people, and even, you know, I met a guy in New York that was gay. Just incredibly talented in his area of expertise, right? Not a big fan of the gay thing, right? But you know what? People are what they are, and you got to accept them on their terms. Our job as Christians is not to walk up and go, hey, you're living in sin. No, that is not the aroma of Jesus Christ. You want to go in and be, you know, the fruits of the Spirit. Do the fruits of the Spirit come in and judge and hack? Now, listen, you do not even misconstrue what I'm saying here. Right is right and wrong is wrong. But good is good and bad is bad. And, you know, like it says in Proverbs, what people desire most in a man is his kindness, right? Kindness is the key to success in this world. It's the key to a different kind of success. People always think that, you know, a man of means, a man who's made wealth, he's got to be harsh and nasty. I love it when I go into, you know, and I'll be honest, God's been so good to us, and I've been very fortunate. But we've had, you know, I've been in business 25 years. I came in with strong banking background, and I was here during the roaring gold and silver boom. And I mean, we were doing, you know, $150 million a year. And even though our margins are small, it doesn't take much to figure out, you know, things work out. God's been terrifically fantastic to us and blessed us. And I shouldn't be ashamed. I think a lot of people hide that. I've also made some bad mistakes. You know, I was watching a thing recently. I can't even remember the guy. Very famous. Hey, good job, Kevin. He failed like 16 businesses. Oh, the guy who started Macy's. You should see his resume, his history. It's terrible. It's pathetic. Anyone would have quit. Not him. Persistence. You go to Brian Burlsworth, I'd love to tell you the story, but I'd much rather have you watch the movie because they put the entire spiritual component throughout the movie where his brother is struggling with the devil over a certain topic, and I'm not going to even tell you what's going on in the movie. I'm just begging you as listeners. I do not recommend movies very often, ever. Okay? Watch Greater about Brian Burlsworth, please. Just do it. It's on Apple, maybe Netflix. I don't know. Find it. Watch it. I'm telling you. And you better be prepared to be moved and motivated. And he is an angelic example of what God and Jesus Christ intend for you and I. Every one of us, I was talking to a friend yesterday, I said, can you imagine if each one of us on earth lived up to our full potential based on the talents God gave us? And then, folks, as another side note, which, by the way, we're probably on side note number 17. I don't even know where I'm at now. I'm like, I used to ski. I've talked in the history about going out of bounds when you're skiing. I'm like on the opposite side of the mountain about, you know, 10 miles down the hill now. Ski patrol will never find me. I'm out. I'm done. I'm going to have to check out. And I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. But it's just, I just keep going side note, side note, side note, side note. So when you're talking about this whole, you know, this parable of talents and this Brian Burlsworth thing and, you know, each and every one of us. Now, the thing I was going to say before I did my 17 miles off course was what about, think, aborted babies? Just say, do you remember little stories about, you know, pharaohs killing babies 2 years old and younger? One that's in all the pseudographia, but not in our canonized scripture. the story of Nimrod killing all children under the age of two because his sorcerers told him that Abraham was going to be born. So he created a massive birthing center, hospital, whatever you want to call it, in the valley of Shechem or whatever it is. Every woman had to go there to have their child, and if it was a male, slain on the chest. Right then, right there. Then we go to Israel. There's a prophecy of a guy who's supposed to be born that no one really knows the name at the time. But some say, some very respected scholars say, that this is the Messiah. His name becomes Jesus, you've heard that. So he's just, but he's an obscure character. You know, now we're like, Jesus, you know, let's celebrate him for Christmas. He's incredible. He's amazing. Oh, thank you, Jesus, for blah, blah, blah. You know, back then it was just like, what? The Messiah's coming? The last prophetic word to Israel was the book of Malachi 400 years before Jesus Christ was born. They had sat in a holding pattern, wondering and waiting. The last word that God put out to them was like, you're robbing me, you're stealing from me, you're ripping me off, you're disrespecting me, you're not living for me, and I'm tired of you. And it just sat, okay? So then we get a guy named Herod. Oh, there's going to be a baby child born. And then, you know, he's got the wise men coming going, hey, we followed the star down here. Well, his men brought these wise men in. And they're like, well, you know, we followed the star down here. And it's supposed to be the Messiah. So there we go, shepherds again. Shepherds are getting the word by night, you know, the incredible star. And then that crazy star carries him back to Bethlehem, where Jesus is born. So here's where I'm going. 2 years and under, bang. Pharaoh tries to kill him. 2 years and under, bang, Nimrod. 2 years and under, bang, Herod. And guess what? So what happened? 2 years and under, try to kill Moses. No luck. 2 years and under, try to kill Abraham. No luck. He's born in a cave. His mother and his midwife have to leave him to get away. And guess what? The story is, and many in the book of Jasher, which is very canonized in the Bible, mentioned three times in a number of other scriptures, he's fed by wolves. What? Oh, that's crazy. That's nuts. Really? That's crazy. It's crazy. But, you know, we've got Immaculate Conception, we've got the parting of the Red Sea, we've got the sons of God entering into the daughters of men with their seed and creating incredible giants called the Nephilim. And we think, hey, you know, they were 9 feet nine. No, it says they were 3,000 L's. Look that up. It's so big I don't even want to tell you. It's like 4,500 feet high. Totally trashed the earth, destroyed it, ate it. Probably, very possibly, the same time as dinosaurs, if the dinosaurs didn't exist before man. And oh boy, there's a can of worms. Boy, you get outside of the 6,000-year earth thing, and man, you start getting a walloping from certain people. And I'm telling you, folks, the Bible doesn't say it. I'm not saying it. It does say it. It doesn't, and it does not. Which is two different things. It doesn't say it, but it also leaves a gap. It's like I say to people, you don't just listen. If you have to ask a question about something serious with somebody, don't just listen to what they say. In fact, try to just for practice. Just for practice, please do this if you want to be wise. I'm not saying I'm super wise. I spent years in banking. I learned how to follow my natural path of curiosity. I learned how to listen to people. And I do get frustrated because, wait, just train yourself to listen to what people aren't saying. Don't listen to what they say. Listen to what they don't say. You're like, what are you talking about, Kevin? That makes no sense. No, it does not. But it does. When you start to talk about a specific topic, okay, and they don't want you to know because it's too private, or, you know, some people have creepy, creepy backgrounds. They can't talk about anything. A friend of mine, you know, said there's, you know, like, I guess, an alcoholic and dysfunctional families, and I did some research on it. It says, don't trust, don't tell, don't feel. Think about that. Don't trust, don't tell, don't feel. Those are the people that seem to migrate towards me for some reason, because I do trust, I do tell, and I do feel. Don't trust. You can't trust them. You can't trust them. You get women who have dads that were unfaithful in various ways. They can't trust their husband. They'll never trust him. They'll always beat him down. They'll say, no, I love him to death. I love him. But they'll just beat him down. They'll never let him feel trusted. He's always the bad guy. You know, then they say, don't tell. So you can't, you know, everything's a secret. And then if you want to go to counseling to get help, you can't do it. It's a big secret. Got to keep this family secret tight. Don't feel. Stuff your emotions. There's two emotions in the world, anger and happiness. That's it. It's the way they see it. If you're angry, they don't need to listen to you. If you're happy and you're a man, they don't need to listen to you. I mean, there's different. I've seen this throughout various experiences in my life. I won't go into. I've been around. I've done counseling. I've seen through all of it. It's just the world that we live in, and it's very, very important that we have to be super careful that we're not hindering or stepping on the toes of other people's talents and gifts given by God. We've got to do that. We have to make sure that we are not a stumbling block that God has clearly told us not to be, right? Absolutely not to be. So you don't want to be a stumbling block. So here we go. There's a couple different things I want to cover right now. One more time. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talents will not. Remember Calvin Coolidge's quote. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Let me tell you. My father was a bail bondsman. Oops. That sounds bad. People say, well, he's the guy that's getting bad guys back on the street. Well, sometimes. But he was pretty selective. I mean, he wouldn't let out molesters and pedophiles and rapists. He didn't have nothing to do with them. Just so you know, protect his name there. But also, you know, we have a right to bond. We've gotten so many things constitutionally spun and skewed, it's ridiculous. So we're a judge. You know, our laws state clearly, our Constitution says, you have a right to fair bail. Fair, reasonable, affordable bail. Bail should be set most of the time based on the customer. Hey, there you go. Hey, you killed somebody. You're one of our customers. No, I don't think so. Sorry. Based on the, shall we call him the defendant? Shall we call him the perp, as police officers do, the perpetrator, the alleged criminal, whatever you would like to call him. Okay. If he has a specific verifiable means, the bail should be relevant. The skip they use for skip risk, they use a determinant that is based on net worth and income. Okay? Is it really that bad? Sometimes if really bad people skip the country, I guess it depends on the crime. Most times, people most of the time don't get restitution for the offense. So, too much information. No, but what I was getting at, oh gosh. Okay, I got to go on here. My talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. I'm going to go back to my dad here. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Trust me, I can confirm that. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. What is omnipotent? All powerful. like God is omnipotent. Persistence and determination are omnipotent. They are the overriding factor. How about we go the overriding factor or resource? Wait a minute. That is the definition of the name Trump. I always say there's something in a name. Donald Jonathan Trump, the overriding factor or resource. What else is your persistence and determination? Does that sound like him? You know, folks, do me a favor. Do not let the media pressure and the peer pressure and even at church pressure push you to denounce your president. I promise you, he is covered by the Lord at a level you don't know. This is exactly what it looks like when someone is covered by the Lord, because the devil is vehemently furious, okay? It's always going to look like this. If he would not have killed Suleiman, they would have gone crazier, okay? Suleiman in Iran, the Iranian butcher, is a very terrible, evil man, rotten and horrible as they come. But the left has got to be the dirtiest, nastiest, most undermining, ungodly, unbiblical, hate-filled group on earth. Now, that'll really tick some people off because they think they see clearly. You don't see clearly. You are getting your subjective facts from a subjective source. You are in a circle of friends, in most cases, that you're afraid to breach, okay? I know people like this, too many. I have some as terrific friends. And it is the most deceptive place to be, because as I was talking with a realtor this weekend, there are two options in this world for governments or leadership or whatever you want. One is government by man or government by God, okay? Now, when people think man is the best option, they do not have experience to actually see how things work out. Now, they may have experience where they see how things work out for them, and they may have a system like little things called the Clinton Foundation, where you go in worth $848,000 in gross net worth. You come out at about $68 million. Your wife gets a Secretary of State position. And suddenly, you have the Clinton Foundation. You're worth $325 million. And Chelsea Clinton's $7.5 million home is bought by the Clinton Foundation. And on it goes. Okay? Corruption at its finest. Okay? So my point was this. Boy, oh boy, do I roll. My dad used to always say prisons are filled with society's best. He would say that, you know, some of them get on the drugs or whatever and they lose it. But here's the deal. They have addictions, problems. Everybody responds and reacts differently. There's people that go straight off the deep end. I know a guy who was the youngest tenured professor at a major university. He came up with some very impressive mathematical research that got the university a significant grant. He got his own building and only had to work a day a week. And when he spoke, you know, this has been a while, but it was $25,000+ a speech. He got hit by a car. You know, one thing led to the other. He had the painkiller thing going on. It was pretty bad. It got worse and worse and worse. His wife had left him when he got hit by the car just because he hadn't picked the right kind of woman at the time. But the thing was, is he just went off the deep end on these drugs, these meds. I've known other people that become physically dependent. At least that's what I would call it. But their lives don't have the addictive checkoff list. You know, it's like people who are full-blown addicts will say, oh, yeah, anybody who's physically dependent on anything is an addict. That, well, you may be addicted, but you're not an addict. In some case, you know, in a lot of cases. I mean, you give anybody enough of something, they're going to get addicted. If you go to Starbucks every day, you're addicted. Okay? Doesn't mean you're a junkie. It just means your body has to adapt to alcohol or whatever it is you're putting in it. So it's important to distinguish between the two. And you also have to learn in an addictive environment, your reaction is a major part of the problem. There's perception, okay? Perception. Somebody assumes somebody's addicted. A mother assumes a child is addicted and or doesn't understand. And so they overreact or they go get radical books and they start to read these crazy things. And then, have I seen this? Oh, yes. And then they begin to, you know, fantasize and go crazy and decide that this is, you know, something that's just insane and insidious. That can happen. And it can create enormous problems over minuscule issues and topics. That's called being a drama queen. Man or woman, if you're a drama queen and you're overreacting, especially in self-righteous judgment, shame on you. You can control your environment. Folks, another thing I'm telling you, I'm covering some topics today. I want you to think about how. I want you to see your speech as a tangible asset. The Bible says that you can speak life or death. I want you to think for a moment of the power of your speech, okay? And what fuels that speech? I deal with all kinds of people. I see men who are effeminate and cowardly and self-promoting with their speech, and they think that they're protecting themselves, and yet at the same time they don't understand that the outward appearance and the outward perception from those around them is actually wanting to assassinate their character. They become so frustrated. People know one of the most important facts in life, just in, you know, in a relation, okay, you always, kindness and empathy always rules, no matter what you do, where you go. But you know what? That does not mean tolerance of the intolerable. It does not mean tolerance of verbal or physical abuse. No, it just means kindness and empathy. You look at the person through God's eyes. You have to see them the way God sees them. We're commanded to do so. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do we see ourselves as bad or good? Well, it depends. For the most part, probably good. We preserve ourselves. If we get to hating ourselves too much, we'll check out. And so, the matter of fact in all of this is the simplistic fact that each and every one of us can control our environment or circle of influence with our tongue. But I beckon you, I beseech you, I beg you, if you've had a traumatic upbringing, you tend, in a lot of cases, to be withdrawn, passive, cowardly. I'm sorry, there's not a lot of word. I've seen some terrible stuff with people's lives, and I see this. I came from a tough, tough background. I early on was dropped off at a runaway home and bounced through group homes and lived on the streets for a while. And I've seen it all and done it all. Luckily, I was able, to get good guardianship at one point that basically transformed me, showed me what unconditional love was, and was able to rebuild me. The other thing, too, just along the addiction lines, and only from exposure and a lot of visual on it, the tough love thing, people will pull that out, and some people will just overdo it. And they do it wrong. The reason that Dr. Dobson invented tough love was for those people that didn't have the strength to be tough. And he was trying to explain, look, you know, if people are really doing bad, you know, the consequences are love. You got to let the consequences play out. People who are harsh and, you know, sometimes angry and destructive and have selective memories and like to block things out and lie to themselves, they love tough love because they can be rude and mean and nasty to people and they use it. But that is not what God intends with love. Love is what? Patient and kind. And, you know, it's not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not envy others. It does not wish evil, but, you know, it wishes the best upon everyone. Okay? That's love. Now, when someone, you get a meth addict or something that's ripping people off and all that, you know, that it's done because you've breached the relationship in a spiritual fashion. But I am trying to just explain the importance of being level-headed, even discussing politics with people. I'll discuss politics or religion with people. Obviously, the left will just lose it. Screaming, yelling, storming. I had a situation one time in a very nice restaurant in Hawaii. Just these people kicked up a conversation with me. I mean, they came at me hard with left-wing propaganda. Totally, you know, bad information. So I just started talking, and I'm diplomatic. I really am. I just kind of throw ideas out there. These people were so vehemently hypersensitive. They you know, they determined immediately what my political position was, which I wouldn't admit. They literally absolutely lost their They lost their cool. They flipped out, dumped their food, and booked out. Now, the bottom line is, was that my fault? No. I was super polite. You know, I didn't. And if I hadn't have been, I'd apologize. But that's what you get. You will not. You'll rarely see that in a conservative Christian-based mindset mantra, because the only time you'll see it is if the abuse, if there's a heinous abuse, they'll walk out. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. The moral of the story, folks, I'm going to finish this persistence quote one more time. My dad, as a bail bondsman, saw lots of wasted talent, okay? The genius thing, it says genius will not. In other words, nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. It says genius, talent will not, okay? Nothing's more common than unsuccessful men with talent, okay? Parable of talents. What's that say when Calvin Coolidge says that? Ouch. That says, ouch. God gives us each a package of talents. And what I was saying earlier, what would the devil do with abortion? If you knew somebody really had talent and somehow you had access, you'd have them aborted. Oh, these terrible situations, though. Kevin, you don't understand. These kids are being born into horrible environments. Kind of like, you mean Abraham Lincoln, who was raised in a little tiny Lincoln log cabin in the middle of a forest with no roads or anything with his 14-year-old mother because a landowner gave it to her for free just to raise her newborn baby? Or how about Albert Einstein, who was also born out of wedlock and born into a situation where everyone, you know, abortion was the logical answer? You can go down Steve Jobs, all kinds of them. This is where God works the greatest. You've got to be built with need. You know, what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. Okay? You got to be born hungry. Being born hungry ain't bad. You may not feel good, and your life may be like painful, but you know, if you can touch millions and millions of other lives, well, you'll be hurting on earth, you'll go to heaven, and you know, those angels will be singing. So trust him. My dad used to always say the prisons are full of these guys. Nothing in the world takes the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with great talent. Genius will not, okay? You got a 180 IQ, you know, go take the Stanford Bitten IQ test online. You'll find out. That's Stanford Bitten. Got a 180 IQ, genius will not help. It won't take the place of persistence. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. There's geniuses all over the place. So what is a genius? It's just someone who's given another talent by God that they're accountable for. How many people use their genius to glorify God? I don't know. How about this? Education will not what? Take the place of persistence and determination, right? Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Ooh, Calvin, you're using big words here. You're using some mean words. You know, we sit there and we think of our political correct society right now. We would never get away with these kinds of terms. I said another word the other day, retarded, and people get all mad, and I'm sorry. You know, I know there's more politically correct words out there. Derelicts is probably another one. It's basically someone who's a waste of life. It's destitution, homelessness, joblessness, propertylessness. It says here someone who voluntarily abandons their lifestyle of whatever. So to be derelict in duty is to walk away from your duty willingly. So he's telling us education does nothing. You know what education does, folks? I've got it. Trust me. And I've got other components here too, but education teaches you to stay in the box. Teaches you to get a good job and just stay in the box. Don't think outside the box. Where Trump went to Wharton School, I was speaking to a guy here recently who whose father went to Wharton School. Wharton School is the one school. All these other schools teach you how to work in the box, to be a good little boy and a good little girl. If you got grandchildren or children, they're struggling with school. That's because school wants them to sit 75% of the time. And they grade the children by this system that the best children are the ones who can sit quietly for, you know, the most amount of time and absorb the most amount of information that they're not interested in and don't care about overall. I'm not saying we can't have a good attitude towards school or nothing, but I'm just saying this is a good student. What about, you know, is this how God makes everybody? Now, our education system's phenomenal and wonderful, or at least it was. But did God make everybody to sit like this? No. There's a lot of us out there that, you know, first of all, there's some. I know parents of kids that have issues, and the parents always run in, and they blame the school. I've seen situations where kids will be getting kicked out of schools time and again. And the parents are always coddling and babying and, you know, and just making it worse. They think they're doing the right thing. Schools don't understand their kids and all this stuff. So we've got to teach self-discipline. It's not negotiable that we operate with respect and dignity. But at the same time, we have to be able to understand that this is not the talent structure or the skill set of most people. And this is why 25% of children are labeled ADHD now, because they're not made for this. You go back in time. Look at our education system. Thomas Jefferson started it. A couple days a week, you're supposed to bring a Bible, math book, and a newspaper. That's how it started in America. Just a couple days a week, a few hours a day. 3 hours a day, 2 days a week. To become the wisest nation on earth. You should read, you know, there's letters from Thomas Jefferson to Madison that are amazing. I mean, the articulateness is amazing. So one more time. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talents will not. Nothing is more important than unsuccessful men with talent. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, quote, press on, has solved and will always solve the problems of the human race. The only thing missing from that is prayer. Okay? But you've got to work your tail off. Work as hard as you can. And God will honor you if your heart's in the right place. You want success, you want fortune, you want whatever, Not fame. God's not into fame. But you want that? Ask for it. Pray for it. Pray for wisdom. Pray for, you know, think of the story of the judge and the unjust, or the unjust judge and the widow. The persistence and determination of her is what got her prayer answered. Same thing. Jesus said, now that I've shown you how to pray, when I come back, will I even find faith on earth? Basically mocking us for being flakes. Saying, okay, now that I've given you this key, if you bang on God's door long enough, he's going to answer you. He'll answer your prayer. He'll, you know, but I'm telling you from all my own personal experience, make sure you know what you're praying for. But he's telling us that. So education will not. The world's full of, you know, of derelicts. We've all discussed all this. So we've got a great Calvin Coolidge quote for the day.